Women of Strength, have you listened to episode 406 yet? Co-founder Julie from Needed and I dove deeper into the reasons for nutritional depletion, which is common in 95% of women, and what to look for in a prenatal vitamin. We were also able to chat about something super cool that Needed has to offer, and that's the Needed Academy. It is a place where people can find free nutritional education taught by leading women's perinatal health experts from OBGYNs, midwives, doulas, and nutritionists. I highly recommend checking it out. To learn more, visit neededacademy.com or check out the show notes for the link. Want one less decision to make in postpartum? Coterie is like the autopilot button for diapers. They're hypoallergenic, ultra-absorbent, and made without any of the junk. We love Coterie because clean ingredients on your baby's most sensitive parts is super important. Best part? You can text them when you need to size up or delay your next box. Postpartum is wild. Coterie just makes it feel a little lighter. You can use our exclusive code VBAC20, that is VBAC20, at checkout to make postpartum a little easier with an extra 20% off your order.
Good morning. Welcome to the VBackling podcast. You are not going to believe what just happened to me, you guys. I was at a birth until I didn't get home into sleep until like 4:30 in the morning. And I knew that I had to record podcasts at 9 a.m. So I set an alarm on my phone for 8:30 so I could wake up and be ready. Well, I accidentally set the alarm for 8:30 p.m. instead of a.m. So I woke up 10 minutes after 9 o'clock in a panic when I texted Megan, or I called Megan, and Megan got on it, and we have our guest here, and she's been so kind and patient and understanding, because this is the life we live, right? The life is just nuts to be a birth worker. And here we are. So I'm happy to be here. I'm glad I didn't sleep any longer than I did. But last night I was at a beautiful home birth VBAC, so HBAC also called. And so I feel how appropriate for me to mess up because I was at a VBAC birth. So it was incredible. And I can't wait to hear Heather's story. We have Heather on today. But before I do that, I'm going to read a review of the week with you. This is from Imir O'Donnell on, I don't know what it's on. It looks like it's on Google, actually. Sorry, Megan just sent me a screenshot. Okay, this is from Google. So she says, this podcast was a constant source of reassurance and inspiring stories throughout my last two pregnancies. I achieved my VBAC in 2021 and was empowered with so much knowledge and mental strength going into this birth because of the VBAC link. I had my second C-section in 2022, which was not what I wished for, but I do plan on having more children and know a VBAC after two C-sections is a possibility for me because of this podcast. I continue to listen to your inspiring stories each time I hop in the car, and I'm so grateful for all you share. I hope to share my own redeeming story with you in time too. I absolutely love that. You know what? Not every VBAC attempt is going to end in a VBAC, and it's just really the reality of it, and it's sad and heartbreaking, and I really wish everyone that could attempt one could get one, but sometimes that's not the case, and I'm glad that this person still found inspiration and hope and healing through the podcast. And yeah, I can't wait to hear if she has a VBAC after two C-sections. That would be amazing. If you are listening, Imir, I think that's how you say your name. Sorry if I slaughtered it. Give us a shout out. Let us know or connect with us for sure when you have that third baby. We would love to hear all about it.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, here we are. Heather. Heather's been so patient with me because of my awful sleeping. This is Julie, by the way. Like, I'm sure you probably recognize my voice by now. But
yes,
It is Julie. I'm hosting today. I usually like introduce myself at the beginning too, but you know, it's fine. We're going to get through this today. I already told Heather, we're going to get through this. She's probably just fine, but I feel like I'm still waking up just a smidgen, but that's okay. I am caffeinating as we speak, and I can't wait to hear Heather's story. Now, Heather had a C-section with her first baby and then a VBAC with her second. Her VBAC baby is just 8 weeks old right now. And she said she's a certified veterinary technician. She's a vet tech that lives in Minnesota, birthed in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And she said her husband and her, I change the pronouns throughout as I'm reading, and it's not working clearly today. She says, my husband and I went through IVF for our first pregnancy and conceived spontaneously with our second. So I'm kind of excited to talk more about IVF and infertility and things like that at the end. I know it's not technically VBAC specific, but I feel like it's appropriate for us to hold space for people that struggle with those things sometimes. So we're going to do that at the end. But before I take up any more of your time, Heather, I would absolutely love to turn it over to you so that you can share your journey with us.
Yes. So my first pregnancy, we started trying in March of 2019. We've been married at that time about 7 years. So it was time. We got married pretty young. So we started trying in 2019. Everything was kind of going okay. Never got pregnant. We ended up seeking help in June of 2020. So it was right before COVID, right around COVID area. Yeah, so it was just a lot of doctor appointments. They started us on Clomid and Letrozole right away. Those are the ovulation induction meds. So I did 6 months of Clomid, and then a couple months of Letrozole, and nothing really happened. So we ended up switching to IUIs, which are intrauterine inseminations. So we ended up doing three of those, actually. The first one I did get pregnant, but it ended up in a chemical pregnancy. So I went in for blood work, seen it was good, and then they do another set of blood work a few days later, and that ended up being lower than my initial blood work. So they said I ended up losing it, so that one ended up in a chemical, which was devastating because we had already been at for about a year and a half at that time. So we ended up doing two more IUIs. They never stuck. So then we ended up going to IVF. So in May of 2021, we ended up doing our embryo transfer. So you have to go through the whole egg retrieval, things like that. And then you end up doing your embryo transfer. So some people do a frozen embryo transfer. We ended up doing a fresh. It was literally 3 days after my egg retrieval, which if nobody's been through IVF, it's pretty intense. But we ended up getting pregnant with that. That pregnancy went pretty good. We ended up doing our first ultrasounds there at the REI, the medical doctor or whatever, their facility. You do the first few ultrasounds there. So at 6 weeks and 8 weeks, just to make sure it's a viable pregnancy, it's in the uterus, things like that. It's not like an ectopic or anything. So everything looked good there. So you end up graduating to your OB, which my OB was technically a primary care provider at a different facility. So I ended up switching from my primary to an OB there at the hospital in Sioux Falls, just because I wanted to keep everything there. It's a bigger hospital. If something would end up happening, I was right there. So we ended up, I found an OB who, a friend who was going through IVF at the same time as me. She had used her and she really liked her. So I ended up choosing her. She ended up being, I think, the doctor of the year that year, actually, which I didn't know about until later. So that was kind of
cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we ended up going with her and she was really nice. The pregnancy went really well. I had no issues. I had no morning sickness, no nothing, which was amazing. Then I started getting a little bit of higher blood pressure towards the end. My sisters actually had high blood pressure with theirs, so I was kind of keeping an eye out for it. And I mentioned that to my OB when we started care for her with her. So we ended up starting aspirin, I think at 12 weeks or something like that. I can't remember. So we started aspirin on that, but it ended up still being a little bit high towards the end. So I was like borderline. It was 140s over 90s. They say that's the cutoff. I was a little bit over that towards the end of that pregnancy. So I remember going into triage 2 days before I delivered with high blood pressure. It was like 9 o'clock at night. And so we went in and they were, of course, my blood pressures were normal and triage. So they sent us home. And then a few days later, I started getting a little bit of a headache. We had my 38-week appointment 2 days after the night we went into triage. And so I mentioned that to my OB. It was like 11 o'clock, I think it was. And she's like, well, how about this? What do you think about having a baby tonight? Sure.
Oh,
sure. So they were planning on inducing me at 38 weeks due to my blood pressure. And so the plan was to come back at 9 o'clock that night. And so we were kind of talking, and then she ended up doing the Doppler. They checked the heart rate and set that appointment, which this was my daughter. Her heart rate ended up being high. So she was tachycardic. It was in the 180s. So they sent us down to do a non-stress test at that appointment. And so we sat there for probably about an hour, and her heart rate never came down. It was continuing to be in the 180s. It would drop to 160s, but that was pretty much the lowest she got. But her baselines at other appointments were like 130, 140. So it was super high compared to that. So they ended up sending us down to triage at that appointment. And then her heart rate continued to be high. They started fluids just to see if that would kick it down. They ended up doing a COVID test because apparently that was one of the things that might happen with COVID. So they did a COVID test that was negative. And then they rolled me on my side and it still didn't come down from there. So we talked about inducing then instead of coming back later. So they were planning on doing a Foley bulb, but they ended up, the doctor came in and she just said, you know, I don't think a Foley bulb's going to work. She's already got a pretty high blood pressure, heart rate. I don't think she's going to tolerate contractions very well. And at this time, I didn't have any breasts at all. So they recommended doing a C-section at that time, which, you know, it kind of broke my heart a little bit because I never got to experience any contractions or like labor at all. And it wasn't against my birth plan. I didn't really have a birth plan at that time. I was just kind of going with the flow. Mm-hmm. You know, being a vet tech, I kind of knew what like the medical field kind of was. And I understand their terminology and things like that. And I guess I just said, if they think it needs to be done, that needs to be done. So she recommended a C-section. So we ended up going with that. So we went in, they kind of, you know, they make you sign the papers, a whole rush of nurses comes in, and it, you know, it wasn't really an emergency, but it kind of felt like very, very urgent. So they wheeled us back. And at that time, I remember doing the spinal. The spinal was amazing. The anesthesiologist did amazing on that. I didn't feel it at all, but I remember shaking uncontrollably. And I'm just a shaker anyway when I'm nervous. So it was kind of scary. So I remember them putting me down on the table. And, you know, they strap your arms down and things like that. And then, like, I think they started cutting before my husband even got in the room, honestly.
Oh, my gosh.
I remember asking them, you know, like, is my husband coming? And they're like, nope, yep, he's on his way. He's right here. And, yeah, so, and, like, a minute later, I remember them pulling her out. And she started crying. They said she had a lot of hair, which was amazing because I wanted her to have hair. But they took her straight to the warmer, and, you know, my husband got to do pictures and stuff like that. They had a TV screen right next to my head that had the camera on where the warmer was. So I never actually got to see her directly after delivery. They held her up above the curtain, but that was about it. Yeah, so my husband got to hold her and things like that. And then I didn't get to actually hold her until they were done sewing me up, and we were wheeled out into the postpartum rooms, I guess, the recovery. Yeah, so I didn't get to hold her until we were physically like going down the hallway. They asked me if I wanted skin to skin, and I'm like, well, yeah, which they just kind of put her on my chest in the blanket, and then we went to recovery. So I didn't really know anything, you know. I mean, it was a good experience. I didn't have any bad experiences from that, except for the fact that I never got to experience the labor, which was, it kind of broke my heart a little bit. So I knew right away I wanted to try something different. I didn't want a C-section again. you know, recovery was pretty rough. And I realize now how much postpartum depression and like more like postpartum anxiety I had, you know, then versus what I do now with my second. So I definitely wanted something different.
I want to take a quick pause in our episode today to talk a little bit more about Needed Academy. As you know, preparing for a VBAC takes a lot of learning, research, and dedication. Our nutrition and overall health is so important and a detail that sometimes gets overlooked. Needed is making it easy for you to get an amazing information really at the tip of your fingertips. This free educational program is on Instagram and it is for birth workers, practitioners, and the curious mom and mothers-to-be. Sharing this amazing resource with anyone you know who wants to understand how they can take care of themselves or others before, during, and after pregnancy. You will learn from leading health experts on topics like the physical demands of fertility, pregnancy, postpartum, and what our bodies need nutritionally to thrive. Remember, we have learned that 95% of pregnant women are nutritionally depleted. You're also going to learn things like why women need radically more nutritional support than the status quo delivers, the science and clinical experience behind Needed products, and more. I have personally been taking Needed products, and I really can't say it enough. They are mine and our team's favorite for so many reasons. I am so excited that Needed has done so much work to help us with solid supplements, and now they're offering this amazing free academy. You guys, if you can, do me a favor. Not if you're driving, but do me a favor if you're not. Stop the show right now and just press pause and click the link in the show notes for the academy. Get started today. It is honestly so easy. You can fill up the form on the link in the show notes and then head over to @NeededAcademy on Instagram to start learning. Don't forget that Needed is also offering our community 20% off with code VBAC. So also go to checkout once you're done with this episode today at thisisneeded.com to find prenatal vitamins, hydration support, sleep support, and more. Again, you can go to thisisneeded.com and get 20% off your order with code VBAC, and that is VBAC. Okay, let's get back into today's show. Let's take a moment to talk about Coterie wipes because they're just as amazing as their diapers. These wipes are made from 100% plant-based fibers and are up to 30% larger than most other brands, making them perfect for even the messiest of situations. They're also hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so they're safe for newborns and even eczema-prone skin. One of our team members shared that these wipes have been a game changer. Gentle enough for delicate skin, but durable enough to get the job done with fewer wipes. They've even earned the National Eczema Association's Seal of Acceptance. You guys, you can pair these with Coterie diapers for a high-performance diaper duo. And do not forget, you can get 20% off with code VBAC20 of your first order of $40 or more. Add a pack of these incredible wipes to your order to see the difference.
I didn't really get into the podcast right away. I kind of started looking into more fertility things because I knew, you know, if we did want a second, I might have to go through that again. So that's kind of where I found like the podcast. I found a podcast called Fertility Docs Uncensored, which was amazing for all things fertility. If you're going through fertility, if you're going through infertility, if you're going through IVF, everything, they're amazing. They're three doctors based out of the South. So one's from Texas, one's from Las Vegas, and one's from Nashville, I think it is. And they are amazing. That podcast helped me a lot. And they, I don't know if they had somebody on there that said something about the VBAC link, or I was just searching through to listen to more podcasts. And then that's where I kind of found the VBAC link. And I started listening to podcasts there. And it was just amazing how everybody had a different story. And I kind of wanted that empowerment. You know what I mean? So that's when I kind of started listening. So we didn't plan on getting pregnant again right away. We waited until my daughter was about 18 months to 20 months of age. So she was around two when I really felt comfortable with the, you know, maybe trying again. So we had a fertility appointment with our REI, our reproductive endocrinologist, for our embryos in July of 2023. And we talked about transferring another embryo because I have five. We have five frozen. So we talked about that. My husband, it's quite a bit of money. So my husband really wanted to try naturally for a few months before we jumped into that, which I was okay with. You know, at first I was a little disappointed we wouldn't be trying with our embryos right away, because to me, they're basically my children already.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I kind of wanted to go straight to an embryo transfer, honestly, without trying, because I felt guilty. But for the sake of my husband, I just kind of, I'm like, okay, let's try until so-and-so point. And if we don't get pregnant by then we will go and do an embryo transfer. And so it was a little bit of, you know, making him happy. And then if it didn't happen right away, then I would be able to transfer an embryo.
Yeah, so, I imagine that's probably pretty conflicting. Like, I haven't had to do IVF, but I did have a client that did IVF once, and they had two frozen embryos, and both were girls. And with her third baby, they had to do IVF, but then they had one embryo left over, and they weren't going to try for any more kids. But then she was like, what if we picked that embryo instead of the one that we got, then I would be missing out on this daughter. And it makes me so sad. And so they ended up using their last embryo because of that. Like, I had never really considered that in that context before, Heather. Like, yeah, interesting. Okay, I'm going to be thinking about that like the whole time you're talking for the rest of your story. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, you're okay. No, they're like little people already, technically. Yeah. They already have all their DNA. So yeah, it was a little hard to go down the natural route for a little while. And it's still kind of hard thinking about that they're still in the freezer, basically.
Sure, yeah.
Eating. But there's, you know, that podcast I listen to, they have a lot of good episodes on what to do with your embryos if you don't choose to use them. So that's really cool. So yeah, so we tried for a few months. I think we tried for 5 or 6 months. So it was January or February of this past year that I ended up getting a positive pregnancy test. And I told myself if we didn't get pregnant at that point, if we didn't get pregnant that month, then we were going to do a transfer in June and we were going to start preparing for that, because I was doing the ovulation test and everything like that. So I gave myself one more month and we ended up getting pregnant that month. So
cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like, I never got that experience of like a positive pregnancy test or like, so I was tracking my cycle pretty good. And then, you know, I'm one day late, literally. I'm going to take a pregnancy test. And
yeah, I feel that.
And, like, I didn't know. Honestly, I think I was in shock a little bit when it came back positive. I didn't really know what to do with myself. So, yeah.
Okay, but how many pregnancy tests did you end up taking before you believed it?
I just took the one.
Okay.
Yes. Well, actually,
because I like it. Well, it took me like, with my first, it took a year to get pregnant, and I did get on Clomid. I did like 3 cycles of Clomid before we conceived, and I had like 500 pregnancy tests stashed in my bathroom, of course, because when you have been trying for a while, and I know that this doesn't really relate in the context, like to the extent of your story, but I do know what it's like to have that like defeated pregnancy tests, like negative pregnancy tests, month after month after month.
Yeah.
And how devastating it can be emotionally. And I also know what it's like to have access to lots of pregnancy tests and wanting to keep taking them to see the positive. So anyway, sorry. Kudos to you for only having to have 2 before you believed it. That's incredible.
So I ended up, instead of going straight to my OB, because I think you have to wait until you're like 12 weeks along in order to go to your OB or 10 weeks or something. So I ended up calling my REI, who we did our fertility stuff with. And I'm like, hey, I got a positive pregnancy. Can we do some confirmatory tests? It was kind of like what we did with the embryo transfer when that came back positive. So we ended up, they sent over blood work orders right away. So I went and did those the next day and they came back good. And then they had a follow-up 2 days later for like a pregnancy test, and they check your numbers and stuff like that, and they doubled. So that they emailed me back, yep, you have a positive pregnancy test. You know, if you want, you can start things here or you can go to your OB. I'm like, I would feel more comfortable if I came to you guys first, just because we had the history of the chemical and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there at 6 weeks, did a an ultrasound. And at that time, sometimes you can't see anything. But ended up, we saw a little sac and a little heartbeat, which is cool. And then we went back again for our 8 weeks, and that came back good too. So they graduated us basically, and we got to go back upstairs to OB again. So that was really fun. So yeah, so that was the start to the second one. I got pretty sick at the beginning, around five, six weeks. I don't know if I got like a cold or something like that. And of course we traveled. We went to Vegas for the weekend actually. And I remember staying in the room the entire time because I was so sick.
Aww.
And I don't know if it was pregnancy related or if it was something else, but it was horrible. So I ended up getting like an ear infection like that. So the plane ride was awful too.
Oh my gosh. That's terrible.
Yes. So we ended up, you know, the rest of the pregnancy was okay. I kind of got like a sciatica spell at 16 weeks with this one. And we farm, so we have like bottle calves and things like that. So we were doing a couple bottle calves, and I remember trying to mix the bottles, and I like could barely stand up because my sciatica was just so bad. So that was around 16 weeks. So I ended up seeing a chiropractor around then. So that was really good. She is right in town, so it was a quick 5-minute, 10-minute adjustment, and she was okay with pregnancy. She actually does newborns too, so I'm like, perfect. I'll keep that in mind. And so I did a chiropractor all throughout my pregnancy. I had really bad varicose veins on my right leg that went up into my groin. So I wore compression socks my whole pregnancy, and I almost needed them all the way up my leg. But it was summertime. It was 90 degrees here. So it was awful. And I work kind of in a warehouse. So that was awful too, because it's 80 some degrees in the warehouse all the time in the summer.
Oh my gosh. No.
So I didn't really want to wear all the way high compression socks at that time. So I had a really bad one right behind my back, my leg. And I remember my daughter said, "Mom, what's wrong with your leg?" I'm like, "Oh, mommy just has an owie," and she put a band-aid on it every night. So that was sweet.
Oh, that is so sweet. How old was she now? She's like 2, right?
She's almost 3, yeah. So she was like 2.5 at that time. Yeah. So that was sweet.
How sweet.
So yeah, the varicose veins, the sciatica, and then I had some acid reflux just like at night. Just like the burning up in your throat. It was horrible. I would take some Tums, and that was pretty much it for that. And then, yeah, so that was pretty much it for that throughout that pregnancy. I started getting a little bit of Braxton Hicks with what I thought was Braxton Hicks, because I never really experienced labor with my first. So I think I started getting some Braxton Hicks towards the end. I remember I got like a cough 2 weeks before I delivered. And I remember getting there were contractions throughout the night and cramping. But then as soon as I would wake up and actually focus on them, they would go away.
Interesting.
So, and then I kind of was keeping an eye on my blood pressure. I was on the aspirin already, and I just was keeping an eye on my blood pressure just because of my family history and my sister's history and stuff like that. So that started to elevate towards the end as well. I remember going into triage a couple days before my appointment with a high blood pressure reading at home. And of course, it's normal at triage. So they sent me home, and my OB was basically like, "Well, you're already at this point." I was already 39 weeks, and she's like, "At this point, if you wanted to be induced, you can." And she was really good about letting me know my options. I told her I wanted to be back from the start, and she was okay with that. And she said that if we did induce, a VBAC would still be an option. And so I thought that was really cool. The only bad thing is with this hospital, they have an on-call rotation. So I knew I was never going to maybe get her unless she was on call that night for delivery. So in the back of my head, I hope I get a provider. If when I do go into labor, I hope I get a provider who's VBAC friendly.
Yeah. And
so that was what scared me throughout my whole VBAC journey, I guess. She was super supportive, but I didn't know if somebody else felt it. And so the one who actually delivered my first daughter, she was a completely different OB too. from the one that I had seen.
Oh, so, okay.
Yep, I forgot to mention that. So yeah, so she, you know, my OB is super supportive, and she said, yep, we can still go for the VBAC with the, you know, induction and stuff like that. So yeah, I was just a little hesitant, I guess, about it all.
Yeah.
I'm just nervous that I wasn't going to get a provider that seen what I wanted. So yeah, so I ended up going into my 39-week appointment and kind of talking to her about it. And she's like, yep, if you want, we can induce you tonight. If that's what, you know, your blood pressure's starting to get elevated. And they were borderline again. I was having like low 150s, over 100s, stuff like that. So they were starting to get up there, and I didn't want it to go super bad because my older sister had Help syndrome. So that kind of scared me too. So I agreed to the induction. So we ended up going home. She was actually kind of mad that they didn't meet the night before, though, and I was in triage. So I was kind of, I don't know if I was mad about that, but she definitely was like, why didn't they keep you? So yeah, we ended up getting scheduled for induction at 7 o'clock that night. So we ended up going home. I took a nap because I knew things probably were going to get, you know, worse, better than good right away. Because my birth plan at this point was VBAC. I was okay with an epidural. I was open to an epidural if I needed, but I wanted to try as far as possible to go unmedicated as long as possible. And it's just to see how my body responded. So yeah, we came back in at 7 o'clock that night. At that point, I guess I did do a membrane sweep at that appointment. I was only 1 centimeter though, and 10% effaced. So I was super closed. But that was okay, I guess. At that point, I was kind of ready to be over pregnancy at that point. So we came back at 7. They started fluids because he ended up being tachycardic too. So we got there and they got me on the monitor, and his heart rate was 180. It's like, oh no, here's a whole, like, my first pregnancy and my first birth just being flooding back to me. Great, we're going to have to go to a C-section. So I was a little nervous about that. So they're like, hey, we're going to start fluids, see if that brings him down. I'm like, okay. So this was 7 o'clock, and rotation for doctors kind of start at 7. So like 7 a.m., 7 p.m., they rotate doctors and nurses and things like that. Like, that's the shift change. So at this point, I hadn't seen a doctor yet. The nurse started fluids, and we were watching the monitor, making sure his heart rate came down. And then at 10 o'clock that night, his heart rate leveled out. So they were like, okay, good. We're going to start with a Foley bulb, which is what I had originally planned, knowing that I had a C-section first, because they told me that I couldn't use the Cervidil or the Cervitex.
Right, Cytotec.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cytotec. And so, you know, the Foley bulb was my plan anyway. So I was just kind of nervous they weren't going to be able to get it in because I was only a centimeter dilated.
Mm.
So they came in at 10, and she's like, yep, we're gonna start you on Pitocin. We'll see how that goes. I think they did a cervical check at that point too, which was absolutely awful. Awful. I don't even know if they could even tell where I was. I don't even know. It was worse than contractions, honestly. That cervical check was horrible.
Aww.
So they sort of like, okay, well, we're gonna start Pitocin. We're gonna start a Foley the next time and see if you're any farther along. So I'm like, okay, that's totally fine. So, yeah, she went out, and then the nurse kind of was just started the Pitocin low. So I remember trying to take a nap and things like that throughout the night. My husband was passed out on the couch, so he was no help. But I remember falling asleep for maybe a half hour, and then the nurse came in, and the monitor had come off my stomach, which was nice. It was wireless monitoring, so that was nice. But I remember her readjusting it just to get his heart rate back. And so at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to get any sleep. And I remember, like, things throughout the podcast that I've listened to, you know, you got to keep yourself active. So I was trying to do that as much as possible. And I kept that in the back of my brain. So I got up and I went and sat on a birthing ball. So I just kind of did that, watched TV for a little bit. The contractions started picking up a little bit, and then I think around 5 o'clock, the contractions were a little bit stronger. So I ended up going into the whirlpool tub, which was amazing. So I sat in there for a few hours, labored in there. You know, you're hooked up to your IV and stuff like that, but she wrapped it really nice and was able to, I was able to get in and out of the tub if I wanted to. And she just kept, the nurse came, kept checking on me, seeing if I needed anything. At this point, we were just waiting for the doctor to come in to check me again, because that was, what, 10 o'clock at night? And then this was 5 o'clock in the morning. So in, at that time, she hadn't come back in to check where I was or even to put the Foley in, because I guess she kept getting called back. And she was in a few different surgeries and C-sections and things like that throughout the night. So she never ended up coming back into my room at all. It was the nurse who was doing everything. So kudos to the nurse.
Yeah.
So she...
Sorry, I was going to say, like, some people, or a lot of people don't realize that most of the time OBs are not going to be, like, the big person involved in your care. And the nurse that you have, like, makes all the difference in your birth. And, yeah, the OBs will be there when you're pushing, and I'll maybe pop in for a couple minutes here and there during your labor. But, yeah, those nurses make a big impact.
Yeah, she did almost 90% of it, honestly. She was amazing. You know, she, I guess she had turned down the Pitocin at one point because it was just like the contractions were coming so quickly. And like, I was just birthing or like breathing through them. So I had no idea, but I overheard her telling another nurse that she had turned it down at one point just to slow things down a little bit. So I was thankful for that. So yeah, I was birthing, I was laboring in the tub for quite a while. And then I remember getting out of the tub because it was just getting cold and I don't like cold water. So you know, I went in the room and started laboring in the room. She asked if I wanted a birth ball or like a birth ball again. So I sat on that. But at that point, like I couldn't really sit down. I just had to keep standing and moving. And I, like I said, I remember podcasts, like people just say, keep moving as much as possible. Movement is key. So I just kept doing that. I ended up getting back in the tub again, which was amazing again. Highly recommend it. And then I got out and I started leaning over the bed. I just put the bed as high as I could and just leaned over the bed with each contraction. And at that point, you know, I was breathing through them pretty good. But at that point, I honestly just could not breathe through them anymore. They were so intense and coming so fast that I was just having a hard time. And I could feel my body start to tense. And in my head, I'm like, you know what? I think I need the epidural now. You know, I'm not going to be able to, my body's going to shut off if I keep going this way. And it's just going to go in fight or flight mode. And I'm not going to be able to, you know, progress because my body's tensing so bad. So at that point, the doctor hadn't come back in. I really wanted to know how far along I was and if they were going to, you know, put the Foley bulb in or not. And then another cervical check just kind of scared me. So I remember the nurse before this one had said if I did another cervical check to maybe do the fentanyl to help out with the pain a little bit. And at this point, like, I didn't really want fentanyl. That wasn't in my birth plan. That was actually one of the things I had written down, that I didn't want the fentanyl. But I'm like, you know what? I just need the edge off for a little bit. They were going to check me at the same time. And then at that, I just needed to know like where I was to get that epidural, if they were going to be able to do the Foley bulb or not. I just needed to know, you know? So they did the fentanyl at that time, which literally lasted 5 minutes. She told me it was going to feel like you had like 3 cocktails, which it did, but it lasted like 5 minutes. So honestly, it probably wasn't worth it. So she ended up checking me and she said I was at a 4 at that time. And this was probably right around 11, 12 o'clock. I was at a 4. So I'm like, okay, at this point, we probably won't need a Foley bulb then.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, then I want the epidural. So she called the anesthesiologist. He came in. He was amazing. At that point, I started crying because I couldn't handle the pain anymore. It was just so intense. So they got the epidural in around probably 1:30. And I remember him saying to the nurse that he wanted a lower dose because he noticed that the other ones that he was putting in was just a little too high. So I was thankful for that because I was able to like move my feet and move my legs, but it took the pain away. So that was super nice. It was a great epidural, honestly. Like, I could move my legs, but I couldn't move my trunk. So, like, the nurse had to help me, like, shift my body in the bed. But, yeah. And at that point, like, I knew I was going to stay in the bed the whole time. So, I kind of wanted a peanut ball just to keep things, like, going as much as possible. So, she set me up with a peanut ball, got me in bed. And then, I remember trying to take a nap, which was amazing because I was up all night. We did a cervical check around 3. That was the first time I had seen the doctor at that point since the night before at 10. So she came in, she had a student with her, and they ended up checking me. I was at the student checked me first. She thought maybe I was a 5, and then the OB ended up checking me, and I was at a 7. So that was super amazing. And then they ended up breaking my water at that time, too. You know, the nurse overnight, the night before, she had mentioned breaking my water when I was still laboring in the tub. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want that until I have an epidural on board. Because I knew a friend of mine had said, don't let them do an epidural, or don't let them do what break your water without an epidural on board. Like, just don't. So that was in the back of my head throughout the whole thing. So since I was 7 already and I had the epidural, I'm like, yep, that's okay. Go ahead and break my water. So they went ahead and broke my water. That was like 3 o'clock. And then I remember they came in a couple hours later and I was at 9.5. The nurse ended up checking me and I was at a 9.5. So she was maybe wondering if I had a little bit of a cervical lip going on at that time. But she was like, no, I think you're complete. So she ended up calling me complete around, you know, 5:30. So that was amazing. So yeah, she said, you know, they put me up in the stirrups and stuff, and they told me to, you know, we're gonna do some practice pushing. So I'm like, okay. And at this point, like, I couldn't feel anything. So pushing when you have an epidural, like, you can't feel how to push. So it was super confusing on how to push. So I did a few practice pushes, I think. And then, you know, the nurses, there was a couple different nurses coming in. I think it was pushing for up to an hour. And then, you know, the shift change at 7. So new nurses were coming in. So they were super wonderful. They kept coming in and they're like, oh, you're doing great. That's a great push. You're doing so good. And so it was super, like, good for me because I actually, you know, it helped me understand if I was pushing correctly or not. And at this point, like, my legs were up for probably an hour and a half at that time. So the epidural actually kind of wore off a little bit, which was a blessing in itself, just because, like, I could feel how to push then. And it wasn't necessarily, like, a painful. I honestly think the contractions were worse than the pushing contractions. And I honestly would push 100 times more than going through the pre-birth contractions, honestly.
Oh my gosh, yes. Pushing it, once you get to that part, pushing kind of feels like a relief in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. So I started pushing. I started actually feeling how to push and, like, where to push so I could actually feel my progress. And then the nurses were amazing. So they, you know, they were talking about dogs the whole time because I'm a vet tech. So they were talking about, like, one of them had bred some dogs and the other nurse had gotten a puppy. And, like, it was so, like, just, like, down to earth talking, like, throughout the whole thing. And then I could feel, like, a contraction coming on before their machine said anything. So, like, they're like, yep, okay, go ahead and push. So, like, it was a nice atmosphere. So we pushed for 3 hours, I believe. It was from 5:30, and he was born at 8:21.
Oh, wow.
That night. Yeah.
They're pretty typical for his first time vaginal birth, right, to have to push for a few hours. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember saying when I was pushing, I'm like, you know, it's been, you know, a few hours. And I remember from other podcasts, like, people push for so long and they never progress. So they end up going C-section. And I remember, you know, the new nurse or the new doctor came on at 7 that night. And I remember saying something to her, like, I hope I didn't get this far and we have to go to C-section. She's like, oh, no, honey, you're doing great. Like, your pushes are wonderful. Even if you needed a little bit of help, which I don't think you will, we're having this baby right here and right now.
Yay!
And
that's
like,
such
oh,
a good
that's,
feeling.
yes. So that was amazing. And the funny thing was, the doctor who had came on at 7 that night, so right before I delivered my son, was actually the doctor who was in triage and delivered my daughter the first time. So that was really cool. So, but yeah.
Well, that is the, I love the variety of stories that we have on this podcast. Each story is truly unique. Like, obviously there are going to be some similarities, especially in the first, you know, with the first C-section, you see a lot of similar things like, oh, your baby's too big. Oh, heart tones. Oh, but you know, all of these different things, right? Failed induction, things like that, right? But I just really love how every story still has that nuance, and every VBAC story is its own special little journey that has its own little unique details. And yeah, I think it's really, really neat. And I'm grateful for you for coming on to the podcast today, Heather. But I wanted to, do you want to take like 3 to 5 minutes and just share maybe either something from your personal IVF journey when you were struggling with infertility, or resources for parents that might have gone through or are going through the same thing right now?
Yes, for sure. So, you know, definitely stay calm through it all. It's a lot of mental load going through IVF, but just stay calm. Try not to stress about it. I definitely recommend that podcast, the Fertility Docs Uncensored, to everyone going through anything infertility at all. They have so many different variety of episodes on almost every topic you can imagine. And they're very, very smart individuals because they're all REIs themselves. So it's three REIs. One from Nashville, one from Las Vegas, one from Texas. And they're all incredibly smart, and they go over, you know, different protocols that they would do, different things that have been seen. They answer questions that people send into them, and they go through everything step by step. So anybody who has any, you know, going through IVF, I definitely recommend them for sure.
That's awesome. I bet it's like a great resource to connect you to additional resources too. Like, I think at the VBAC link, we've had quite a few. I feel like every episode you can learn something from, right? And sometimes it's just a resource or a person or something you can connect with. We've had lots of different guests from different fields of study in the birth world. And I think it's just really neat. Yeah, cool. Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your story, and congratulations on your VBAC and your sweet little brand new snuggly 8-week-old baby. I hope that you get lots of snuggles and enjoy that newborn stage as much as you can.
Thank you so much for having me. This was surreal, honestly. Like, listening to the podcast and being on it is a completely different experience, and I loved it. So thank you so much.
Oh, yay. I'm so glad. And thanks again for being patient with my lateness and my complete disorientation, I guess, in the mornings. You're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.